And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. Today, I'm back in one of my favorite locations in Geneva. I'm in the office of the CEO of Geneva Airport at Cointrin. It's a glorious mid-April afternoon, and I'm looking down on the busy runway and up towards France and the imposing wall of the Jura Mountains, Magnifique. I recorded my first McKay interview here in October 2012. It's scarcely believable. And that was with the predecessor of my guest today, who is Dr. André Schneider. He's a remarkable man whom I've had the pleasure of knowing for quite a few years. He's also an engaging, conversational company, a superb communicator, and a true polymath. Now, let's just listen to this. He started his professional life as an orchestral tuba player in Germany, then turned his hand and his brain to computer science, studying here in Geneva, ended up doing a PhD at CERN, the largest particle physics laboratory in the world, not so far from here, developing supercomputers for high energy physics, worked for 11 years for IBM, I think in Barcelona, followed by 13 years at the World Economic Forum, including 8 years as managing director, each one his own independent consulting business, then went to the EPFL in Lausanne, one of the top universities in the world, to be vice president in charge of resources and infrastructure, and finally ended up here at Geneva Airport as CEO in 2016. He's now on the last lap of his successful time here, and I'm lucky to grab half an hour with him to bring us up to date on what's going on. Welcome back to the McKay Interview, André. It's always good to see you, and I know that our listeners are keen to hear what you have to say about my favorite airport.
Thank you very much, and welcome to Geneva Airport.
Great. Good to be back. André, we talked 5 years ago, the last time we met with radio microphones, about the origins of this airport and the fascinating fact that in 1919, Plainpalais, and not Cointrin, was one of the first ever proposed sites for Geneva's airport. For listeners not familiar with Geneva, let me firstly explain that Plainpalais is a large space right in the middle of today's modern city of Geneva. André, please tell me, all of us, in fact, that story again, because it's both instructive and amusing.
Okay, in 1919, actually, just as a prelude to the coming here of the Société des Nations,
The League of Nations.
Yes, the League of Nations. Yeah. Actually, the government came up and said, we probably need to organize an airport. So they mandated some military people. At this time, we didn't have actually an official air military branch. There were just some guys who were knowing how to fly. Yeah. And they looked at different places. And naturally, this one here was also in there. But they were also thinking about Plainpalais, because at this time, there were actually planes taking off there.
Oh, there were planes taking off
yes,
there?
Yes, yes, but see. Probably little ones, a little bit like Brother Wrights and stuff like that. And there were several other places. And so, I mean, just imagine what would happen if you have that in the middle of the city. It would probably be a little bit like the old Hong Kong airport, where you probably would fly by the balconies of people living. And I don't think that would be a good idea. At the time, was selected here the fields here, which was far out of the city. Unfortunately, over 100 years later, we are totally surrounded by the city and also France.
Yeah. Exactly. No, it's an amazing story, that. So look, you've been at this important post since 2016, and you'll finish later this year, if I'm correct in that.
Yes.
During your tenure, you've suffered the worst pandemic in 100 years, when no planes flew for weeks, even months. You celebrated the airport's 100th birthday. You've had at least one annoying strike, as far as I know. Tell me, what have you been most proud of in terms of your achievements and the achievements of the team around you that's contributed to your success, André? What have you been most proud of here?
I would mention two things. One thing is, you know, there is a global way of measuring customer satisfaction or passenger satisfaction. And when I arrived here, I mean, and it's measured on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the best. Mm. And Geneva was always between 3.7 and 3.9. And there was a big target to go beyond 4.
Yeah.
This might sound a little bit little, but when you know that we have a very old terminal, which frankly was created for 5 million passengers, and today we're more than 3 times more, we are struggling with the infrastructure we're having.
When you say very old, how old is that building?
It was built in 68.
Building? 68, okay.
And it's frankly getting a little bit to the end of his life.
Yeah.
So the first thing is actually we really achieved to get to this level. even with this old building. Now, we have plans to build a new building, but nevertheless. So that's the first thing I'm really happy about.
So customer satisfaction.
Yes, because it's really a joint effort of all people here to really put that one on the highest of their agenda. And frankly, reaching it after so many years when we tried to reach it and we didn't get there. The second thing is really to have been able to put in works the project to replace this terminal. This has become the most important thing we have to do. It has been under discussion since 2012, 13. And frankly, there were so many different ideas which all didn't work out. Now we have a plan, we have a company who will build it, and we know exactly how to do it. So I must say that also I'm very happy because, again, it was a joint effort. It was also a way to integrate all, because all the previous projects were done by part of the house. So they didn't really respond to all the needs. Yeah. We actually did a real work with everyone to say, what would be the perfect terminal? So at least when we choose now the new one, we know what we didn't get, but we know also what we get. So that I'm also very proud about.
Okay, we're going to come back to talk about that in a bit more detail later on. But just to be honest with me now, and I know you will be, about your disappointments over that time, in particular the issues which have proved perhaps surprisingly to you to be the most difficult to manage and the most difficult to overcome. And in your answer, give me some insights into how labour relations work here, when I imagine many of your staff are frontaliers and cross from France into Switzerland each day to work. And I'm not blaming them in particular, but I just wonder if that's a particular thing that you have to deal with.
I think the difficulty is actually we are a public institution, so it comes with a lot of public laws. And also the fact that somewhere we're in a time where people do actually have a tendency to have all the advantages but not the disadvantages. So today I'm confronted, and I just had a meeting this afternoon, with neighbors and associations who would like us to support Geneva but have less flights. And somewhere that's kind of a difficult thing.
Yeah.
So that's something which I've lived that one already when I was at the World Economic Forum, and it's a recurring thing. And the other thing clearly is already in 2018 and 19, we saw that the growth will go down. We have lived from 2000 until 2018 or 2017, a solid around 4-5% growth. And when you go down to a more like 1.5, 1.2 growth, you have to rethink your cost evolution and stuff like that. And it's clear that, which was also frustration which led to this strike, we tried to reconfigure that to be more adapted, that all our costs are more following our income. Now, we haven't been able yet to do it. We're still under discussion, so I'm not giving up hope. I'm a perpetual optimist. But it's true that this reorientation of the organization to go to its slow growth future, and being still capable of doing all the upgrading and stuff like that, is still something which is not totally done. And sometimes I get the feeling that even, the people around of us don't understand those challenges. They just think it will happen.
So to give the other side of the argument the benefit of the doubt, are they not just taking a negotiating position, or do you believe they're coming to you with this rosy picture of what they would like to happen? Or is that just part of a discussion?
It's possible that it's a negotiation posture. I think one part is just there are too many people around me who don't like change. But that's a little bit fact of life. So you need to take time.
Sure.
And we probably started that
Carry them with you.
And do the right mixture between casualing into doing the change and pushing them into doing the change. So that's one thing. And perhaps one really important learning, which I learned on multiple occasions, is don't underestimate the unwillingness of people to change. That's going to be a very important thing. I think also the fact that very little people around us in our governance, but also in our ownership, do really understand what it means to run an airport.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rather particular job, isn't it?
Yes, but you know, it's difficult to answer to some requests or injunctions if people don't really have the in-depth knowledge. I mean, I spend a lot of time just to explain what's possible, what's feasible, what's sensible, and also to have Genevans understand that there are federal laws, and that means they can't just change things. And this is often a source of bad feelings, when at the end it's a fact of life. You know, it's like I will not tomorrow say I want to determine who is the next American president. I know that this is a job of someone else, and the outcome might not be what I would like to see.
Yeah, I understand. Let me ask you a very specific question, because I'm sure people listening would like to know this. Where can we fly from Geneva today that we couldn't fly when you took over as CEO? And where can one fly directly without having to transit through Zurich? And what are the future plans for destinations, any new destinations that you think will be interesting for us to know? Just to tell the wider audience listening on the radio.
Okay. On the European offering, I don't think we have changed. I mean, we have not increased the number. We have changed a little bit destinations. So it's a little bit, I think we see lately a increased level of flights to the northern Nordics. And some other destinations. Where we have worked quite hard on is actually increasing the intercontinental flights. We have been able to add the flight to Addis Ababa. We have been able to add a flight to JFK, which is not Swiss.
And these are direct flights?
Yes, yeah. These are direct flights. Mm. And I think we see also we have been able to increase the frequency to certain destinations. So I think we're on the right path, and we want to extend that. I think we still could have some direct connections to Asia. We still hope to have something to Latin America and probably to North America also. But this is a lengthy process. We are not a hub. We're not a big city beside an airport. And it takes some convincing, even if all the airlines here are extremely happy of being here because they have a very high level of profitability. Because typically first class and business class is almost sold out always. But that's something which is a little bit counterintuitive to the general public of airlines, which are more concerned to fully fill economy class and then start to fill the premium classes.
Whereas the arithmetic of filling an airplane, in terms from revenue point of view, is really quite interesting from a first class and business class point of view.
Absolutely. Yeah? You can probably be more profitable by just concentrating on those two. Before you go to economy.
Really, as much as different as that?
Yes.
Yeah, my gosh. Tell me, let's talk a little bit about COVID. How has the business developed now that COVID is a few years behind us? I have in my camera a memorable photo of airport arrivals. I think it was in October 2020. I just had to come through for some reason. And the space was empty.
Oh, yeah.
Completely. It was really like a ghost town. Now, are you back to 2019 numbers yet?
Not totally yet. We have been last year at -8% compared to 2019, but we're clearly going towards that. Probably not this year, but next year. And but having done quite some work on improving our cost to revenue structure, we've actually made more money than before the crisis, even with less passengers, which essentially is the same thing for airlines, because given that they also had some troubles to re-offer the same level of offerings, because they lack crews, planes, and stuff like that. And they do what we call yield management, which means the ticket gets more expensive when the flights are more full.
Like hotels.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, they have also made extremely good years. I mean, when you look around over the last 3-4 months, you had everyone announcing the best year ever.
Yes, I've heard
so,
about
But we are clearly convinced, and we see it coming, because actually the staying behind the 2019 figures was not really because there was a lack of demand. It was clearly a lack of offering.
I see. I'm at Geneva Airport today. My guest is Dr. André Schneider, the Chief Executive Officer. André, how profitable is the airport? What does the total revenue comprise, all the different components? For example, when my wife and I travel, we usually buy something in the duty-free shop. But how important is that business to you, considering the space the shops take up? And how are the airport's profits used? I'm just curious to know what happens to the money.
We have an overall revenue of close to 500 million Swiss francs, which is 1% close of what we earned in 2019 as a comparative. And we made this year a positive result of 88 million. So we're roughly at a little bit less than 20% of our revenue, which is actually translated into benefit. Now, our revenues are essentially composed of what airlines and passengers have to pay to use our infrastructure, because at the end we're not running airlines. That represents around 48% of our revenue, 58%
of your revenue,
of our revenues, of the famous almost 500 million. And all the commercial operations, which are essentially parkings, which we fully run ourselves, so all the revenues go to us. And then the commercial concessionaires, which are shops and restaurants, represent the other 42%. So when you go to a shop here, the shop will actually have to pay a percentage of their benefit they make out of this business. So we don't ask them a rental. Now, one thing I have to say, currently we're suffering of not enough space for those shops, because we're in an old building, and frankly, which was never for the size of passengers we have. And unfortunately, because the first priority always is to run the passengers through the terminal, it's always that you will reduce commercial space in favor of operational space.
So the retailers complain, they just need more space.
I think we complain ourselves because we haven't got enough. We have actually, we do really well because we have a very high level of revenue per square meter, but that's kind of something very sensible. So with the new terminal, which we're going to build, we will increase the space, not because we want to make much more money, but because we want to stabilize that in a much better way.
I see. Just a short question, because it's been quite topical recently in the press. What's your view on this train versus plane debate between the cities of Geneva and the cities of city of Zurich?
First of all, we have made our position very clear. For our employees, when they go to Zurich for a meeting, they take the train. So I must say, for a city-to-city trip, it's probably much better to take the train for a distance like Zurich.
City centre to city centre.
Yes. Yeah. But if you go to Zurich because you take another plane to go further...
To Kloten.
You go, for example, to Zurich airport, then you go on to Singapore. I mean, frankly, who will carry during 3 hours all his baggage in the train, not knowing what will be the situation on the check-in?
Yes.
And on the security control after 3 hours of trip? It is much easier,
of course it is,
to actually check in here, close to where you live. And actually then you don't care about your baggage anymore. You don't go through security controls anymore. And you just move on. So clearly for connecting to hubs, it doesn't make sense to want to ask people to take the train. What they will be doing if such a law would be passed, they would actually go through another hub where they don't need to take the train.
They would, yes.
So somewhere we would probably cut off at least a big part of people coming from Geneva to go through Swiss.
So there's a very real business disadvantage of
it's the convenience.
Of course it is.
Look, you travel a lot.
Yeah.
Would you really like to spend 3 hours in a train with all your baggage?
No.
And then run through the Zurich airport railway station to get to the check-in and all that stuff?
No.
It's counterintuitive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I agree with you.
And frankly, if then the people are just going to London, it might actually be much less ecological either. If they want to fly, let's say, to the east, so they're going to fly first to the west and then go to the east. I mean, it doesn't make much sense.
No, I great sympathy with that. Let's talk about expansion. You've already mentioned this anyway. There are people listening to us now who do not want people to fly, or at least to fly much, much less, in order, some would say, to save the planet. Can you offer a personal opinion on the role of air transport in the foreseeable future? I know you've got plans for expansion, we're going to talk about that, but what is the case for expansion, and at what cost environmentally speaking?
Let me just give two examples to illustrate my thing. Let's say you are part of the Portuguese diaspora living here around Geneva.
Yes.
If you want to go other than by a plane, you will either travel 24 hours in a car or even more in the train, changing 4 or 5 times.
Well, I'm not the DM, but my son with three of my grandchildren live in Portugal, and we haven't driven it yet. We've always flown to Lisbon.
So I think air traffic is a good replacement for lots of distance, because we're not going to build a fast train between Geneva and Porto or Lisbon. Because A, there wouldn't be enough customers, and B, can you imagine all the space you would actually destroy because you have to build this land? We need a runway to take off and a runway to land. So I think aviation has its role to play. Because, I mean, would you go still to the US if you have to take a boat for a week to get there?
I doubt it.
So I think, I mean, there's only two alternatives to that. A, you travel much longer, which no one probably will have time, or you stop traveling.
You should travel less, which is what some people want you to do.
I must believe I have grown up in a time where it was inconceivable to take the plane because I wasn't rich enough.
Yeah, me too.
And I then, when it was possible, I started to discover the world. Yeah. Frankly, we're living today in a globalized world. So I don't think that the answer is we are condemning now everyone to live in this 25-kilometer circle around where he lives. So what we really need to do is actually to decarbonize aviation. Because, you know, it's a little bit like saying, because cows produce also CO2, we will not drink any milk. And unfortunately, there are people actually asking for that. But we would just stop drinking milk, eating cheese and
eating
all that
beef.
Stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's yes, we need to get to a balanced approach because climate change is a real problem. I'm not underestimating it. But just disallowing something and frankly, of a group towards another group. It's a little bit like I would say you are not allowed to come here if you don't have a white shirt and a tie. I would never do that. That doesn't make sense. Yeah. So what we really need to do is, yes, we cannot envisage to go and have a vacation trip every weekend. Clearly, doesn't make sense. But to just totally disallow it doesn't make sense either. So we have to have a more responsible way to consume. But that's not only true for that. It's true for whether we want to buy fruits which don't exist in the winter and so on and so on. There's lots of other things. But secondly, I think we as an industry, our role is actually to work like crazy to decarbonize it. Like we have actually planned. I mean, we have announced Geneva Airport will be no more producing CO2 as an airport in 2037. And the industry has made a pledge to be decarbonized in 2050. Which is actually in sync with the Paris Agreement conditions. So I mean, it's a little bit too easy in my eyes to say what we don't like and certain don't need, think to need, we will just disallow it.
Yeah, I'm persuaded by that argument. But as you know very well, there are people who are probably tearing their hair out listening to this on the radio right now.
Yeah, but you know, at the end, okay, I can understand that. But you know, it reminds me, you know, I'm old enough to have lived with the Soviet Union, the East Germany. That were states where the people were told what they can do and what they cannot do.
You can wait 10 years for a car.
I must admit, I've been living next to them and I had some friends there. And none of them really wanted that. So I must admit, do we want to go back to a state where the state decides what I can or cannot do? It doesn't take away that I have a personal responsibility. Mm. You cannot have freedom without responsibility.
Of course.
And I think there we're still not up to the par either.
So let's just talk a little bit more about your great project, this expansion that you're very pleased. What will it look like, this expansion? I mean, here we are between a border with another country and a highway and a federal railway line. I mean, what will you do? And when will it start and when will it finish?
Okay. What we have to do is we have to create more space because today in this terminal, which was built in 1968 for 5 million people, with a process which didn't know really security controls, where actually people walked to the plane. So no bridges, no nothing.
Really? That's what it was like?
Yeah. It was like that. Yeah. So what we need to do is actually we have to extend this, and we cannot build it on top. You cannot have 5 floors of an airport. It needs to be limited. You can have a floor for arrival, a floor for checking in, and the floor for going to the plane, but you cannot have much more. So what we need to do is we actually have to go closer to the highway to actually use the space in front. We cannot go beyond the highway because that wouldn't make sense either, but we have to get closer. In order to do so, we've actually to rethink the whole place in front, which today is a mix between short-term parking, taxis, Kiss and Fly, and all the buses which go over the platform, which are actually spread all over the platform, which sometimes makes it not so easy to find them. So what we're going to do, we're actually...
Sorry, when you say the platform, you mean when people drive, is that what you call the platform? When
yeah,
we drive
the
car in...
That's the place between, in front of the actual terminal towards the highway.
Right, okay.
That's what I call
the platform.
So what we want to do is first, we want to move all the buses and all those on top of the railway station. We're actually going to take off the higher level of the railway station, which is today, in essence, a pizzeria, and actually build there an arrival and departure place for the buses which come here and other public transport means, with actually a real verticality to the railway. So actually people who come to Geneva Airport, and there are more and more, who are just coming here to take the bus to go somewhere else in the north of the canton,
I've done that
they will
too.
Have their own... Yeah. Well, to actually take away all the short-term parking, put it in the first level of our underground parking, and then we can actually move the terminal ahead, which will give us space because we will not be able to transform the whole terminal because we have to recall we will continue operating. We cannot tell the people, hey, guys, we're closing for 5 years.
Obviously.
We're going to do a big construction and then we come back. So it will be in two phases. But it will start in 26 with the constructions, really moving the whole what we call multimodal platform over to the railway station, creating the space to then start in 29 with the new terminal, which is actually just built in front of the old terminal and will be joined. And that will also give us the possibility to actually take away the whole space. And in this new building, we will have arrival, an extension of the arrival, check-in, and security control, which means the whole space beyond there, where we have today, we will cover the whole old part of the check-in. And we will create a huge platform, which will be uniquely oriented to the commercial side. So a lot of more space, like one-third more space for that. So that's, and the new terminal will really look, it will be open, you will see all the floors, you will have huge windows. Really, it will be a little bit more, how you say, higher roofs, so you really feel a little bit more space. Not because we want to have that much more passengers, but today, when we are full, you feel like cramped in a metro.
That's true.
And we need to get away from that. People don't like that.
Can I ask you another question? You talked a little bit about... fuels and sustainability. I live in the flight path on the Fune side of the Canton Vaud, the northeast of the airport. When the breeze is blowing, the planes come over me. They're quite high, so it doesn't disturb me, but they come over. But what about the residents in Gentot and Versoix and Grand Saconnet and Vernier? What do they say to you about noise pollution, the smell of jet fuel, the opening of and closing? I mean, I'm just curious to know how you deal with your neighbours.
Clearly for the neighbors, there is on one side the CO2 emissions, but that's something you cannot totally feel. There might be some fumes of the aviation fuel, but that's very punctual, but it's essentially the noise. Because you can imagine if you have a plane, let's say 100 meters above your head, it's quite noisy. That's why we have started this special program quite some years now, where we actually reward financially airlines who come with the last generation planes.
Really?
Because they actually do reduce by 40% the noise.
So they pay lower landing fees, do they?
No, they actually get money back because I'm not allowed to lower their landing fees.
I see. Okay.
This is a highly complex, very well watched by the airlines domain. But so we have decided we actually give them money back at the end of the year. And that has allowed us to actually reach one third of our movements last year of those last generation planes, which are 40% less noisy. And frankly, one cannot show it here, but I go with visitors to the north of the runway and we actually have them listen to a normal plane, which is not much older. It's almost the same age. And the last generation new motorization planes, which are called NEOs or A220s or whatever, to actually listen one after another. And frankly, it's very notable, the difference. So we are going to continue to develop that. And clearly the other thing is, the other part of the noise pollution is especially the increase of movements after 10 o'clock in the evening. Because then you go towards night and it's becoming an issue. Now we need to maintain our arrivals because we are not a hub. So I have to assure someone who arrives at 9:30 in Zurich, he still can come back to Geneva.
Of course.
Because otherwise I will tell him, that's great, now you can stay there because there's no train leaving at 10 o'clock in the evening to come back to Geneva. So that I will need, but there is increasing new measures like continuous descent, which makes really much less noisy.
And what is a continuous descent?
It's actually, instead of lowering your height and then stabilizing your height and then lowering it again, which means each time you stabilize, you re-put the engines, is much more actually concentrate on the fact that the plane continues to fly even if you don't put the energy into the reactors, because it has an uplift, which is normal for a plane. So it allows to go down much slower and in a much less noisy way. But we have an issue. We have quite some flights which depart, which we have no departures after 10 o'clock in the evening, except three intercontinental destinations, which is at the moment very limited numbers of flights. But we have a lot of departures which are after 10 o'clock because they're delayed. So we're going to introduce a system which will cut down on it, because that's actually the increase of flights after 10 o'clock in the evening. It represents over 90% of the increase. Arrivals have been very steady. We've also reduced the capacity in 2017 to actually recognize we will not need full operations after 10 o'clock in the evening, but enough to get the people back.
Just a quick question about France. As I look over your shoulder, André, I can see France is not far away. How do you get on with your neighbors? I mean, we're talking about a sovereign border, a sovereign country. You've been there a long time, 100 years, we've said. Tell me how that interaction goes.
I mean, in the 50s, we actually had to sign a bilateral agreement because we got the runway longer. And
That way?
Yes, in this way.
Yeah.
Direction
northeast.
And at this time, actually, the border went towards Switzerland, almost where today is the road coming from Ferney.
Yeah, okay.
So there was an exchange of land, and it has allowed to introduce this French sector and stuff like that.
I see.
And this agreement needs to be managed. So we have constant interaction with them. We try to involve them as much as possible, even if they are another country. And we're actually a Swiss national airport. And so we try to be as open and as to discuss with them, to integrate them. Look, it's like our neighbors here. They will not all start to love us.
No,
because we're doing
that.
Noise. But we try to be as open to show that we take that serious.
Yeah, I understand. Two more questions. More to do with airplanes and security and safety. But the first one is, and you've touched on it a little bit with this method of now of landing. How much closer can airplanes fly to each other during landing or even takeoff, where the risk of collision? I mean, what's in the back of my mind is, in a small airport like this, how can you increase the throughput of airplanes?
Frankly,
safely.
We have seen actually a reduction of movements in 2018 and 19, and we believe when we're back to the levels of 2019, we will go in a very stabilized, because 90-95% of our customers and flights are actually for European destinations, very mature. Which will not add more flights. They will just fill the planes more or actually make bigger planes.
Okay.
So, and the ruling is very simple. It's actually 2 minutes between two planes, because that's the way how you can judge that there's a minimum distance. So actually the following plane can take actions if it needs and so on. There are works to actually redefine that one, not in time, because it could be less time if you fly slower. You know, it's not... Actually, it's not the perfect measure of distance, because it will rely on the speed of the plane at this moment. So there are optimizations. But I would say today, the runway is not our major issue, except some weekends in the winter when we have a lot of skiing tourists coming here. But even with that, we can deal. So I must say, we believe it's the right way to do it this way, because it gives a maximum security. And nevertheless, just to recall, flying is still the most secure way of transportation.
The safest way of traveling,
Compared to anything
Absolutely.
Else. And it's also due to the fact that we have very strict rules, which we are not going to play with.
I'm not sure if you can answer this last question, because it's a little bit sensitive, but I'm going to ask you anyway. With so many high-profile international leaders and heads of government, heads of state, not to mention the millions of the general public arriving, departing here. Give me some insights into how Geneva Airport interacts with the providers of sensitive information from within the Swiss federal government, as well as guidance and advice from neighbouring states. I mean, do you, for example, have a special intelligence unit here that advises you on this?
First of all, we are collaborating with the local police force who is looking after the diplomats and the airport.
Okay.
There's a special force, which is itself in link with the federal police.
That's how
the
network works.
And defense research. So through these channels, we get alerted.
Very good quality information on a timely basis.
And frankly, I don't need to know everything because we have a very close collaboration, which allows us to be always prepared. We get alerts if we have to do something more or less. And it's a good close collaboration. And sure. I think that's how it should be.
Sure. Last question, André. What next if you're leaving here?
Oh, this is, I mean, first of all, one thing is clear. I don't feel like the age that I need to go on retirement.
No, you shouldn't.
So I'm currently negotiating on different directions to do something. And I'm very much looking forward to stay fully on the run and involved.
Well, I'm relieved to hear that, André. Look, thanks so much for answering all my questions in such good humor. It's always a pleasure to see you and talk to you. And as now you've answered my question, I'm happy to know you're not going to stop, because talent like yours is rare. My guest today has been Dr. André Schneider, Chief Executive Officer of Geneva Airport. Thank you again, André, and good luck in your next trip.
Thank you, and it's always a pleasure talking to you, and perhaps we might have the chance to talk to each other again out of a new job I'm doing.
I hope so.
Thank you.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.